Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman, and today we have our first podcast since the start of free agency, the unofficial start of free agency. The start of free agency isn't until tomorrow, but the legal tampering period has really become the start of free agency. I mean, let's be honest. A lot of stories have already broken. I mean, there's no waiting in the NFL. The second a guy is going to go somewhere, it's breaking news. And it's all over the internet. Teams are announcing contract signings and all that stuff. So I don't know why there's this this disconnect between what the legal tampering period really is. It's the start of free agency. They just can't sign their contracts until tomorrow. And there's one team with all the names flying off the shelf and all the teams making big splashes and all that stuff. There's one team that's definitely been very noticeably absent and quiet, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles, who, if you follow their social media, if you follow their Twitter, the only thing that they posted about, the only sign they posted about was the restructure, the one-year extension of Brandon Graham. That's the best that they could give us. Based off the fact that their salary cap situation is so bad, that they decided to save that for the first day of free agency to basically announce that, which a couple, you know, days prior, or maybe even up to a week prior, the Brandon Graham restructure was already being discussed. It was already rumored. So I'm sure that they had that in the bag since then, but they had to save something. They had to save something for the first day of free agency to make it look like they're doing something. So if you follow their Twitter and their social media accounts, that's all you saw. Other than that, it's just been crickets. As the Eagles right now don't really have the means to spend any money on free agency, but that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of rumors and a lot of things to discuss, especially around the division. The number one story in the division, in my opinion, is the is Ryan Fitzpatrick coming to the Washington Redskins. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of people make a big deal about this. Most people think that Ryan Fitzpatrick is he's kind of somewhat like the lovable loser in the NFL, the career backup who never really got his due. You know what I mean? Like there's some sort of like he's almost like a career long Nick Foles. You know, where a guy that when you call on him, he can really do something special, but he's not really supposed to be a starter, and he's kind of just like a closer in the NFL. I actually think he's a little bit more than that. Actually, watching Ryan Fitzpatrick over the last couple of years, I think he's developed into a really good quarterback. And I think that if he would have stayed the starter in Miami last year, I think they would have been a better team, especially when they got into the playoffs. But they ultimately made the decision to move on with the young guy. I don't think it was based off of Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't think it was based off of his play. If you look at the stats, through seven starts, he had 2,000 yards. So essentially, he was on pace for his first 4,000-yard season if he would have started the entire season. And he's a guy that I think will make the Washington Redskins a very viable contender to repeat as division champions in the NFC East. I think he makes them a viable enough team to possibly even do it in a fashion that isn't just by default. I mean, most people look at this division now and say that this is just, you know, the Washington team won last year based off the fact that they were the only team that was competent. I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick can put them in a position where they might even be a dangerous team come playoff time. That's how I feel about Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think I said in a previous podcast that he was the one guy I didn't want them to sign because I think that he instantly gives them credibility, which is not something that a rival division opponent fan should want. I mean, honestly, that was the real anchor when it comes to Washington, is that they didn't have a quarterback at all. I mean, they have other issues too. They don't really have much of an offensive line. That's something that they could address maybe in the draft. I'm not suggesting they're going to try to build around Ryan Fitzpatrick. I still think their number one pick, especially in this draft, they should do everything they need to do to go get a quarterback in this draft. I mean, that should really be their first priority, their second priority. If they have to do like the New Orleans Saints did when they traded the entire draft to the Washington, they were the Redskins back then, but to the Washington football team to move up to get that quarterback, that's what they should do. I mean, that was basically the one of the biggest draft moves ever made. That really should be Washington's goal. And you know, that's a scary thought if they actually get a good quarterback to go with, you know, a defense that I still feel, I mean, free agency just started. I still feel they still could use a little bit of help at linebacker. They could use a little bit of help at cornerback. But ultimately, I think they're going to pull these. I think they're going to get this together. I think the defense is going to come together and be a top five defense for several years to come, because it all really revolves around that outstanding defensive front that they have, really being the key. So I think that Washington's going to get that defense together. I think they're going to get a couple of free agents. I think they're going to get a couple of decent draft picks, and they're really going to have a really tough defense, which should be scary for the rest of the division, because ultimately, the offense is not that far behind. The offense found some good young players last year. They found some good young players in the draft. The running back that they got last year looked like I don't want to call him a workhorse. I mean, he definitely looked better than he did in college, because in college he was more of a, from my understanding anyway, he was more of a gadget guy, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. He looked like an NFL caliber running back, like a real serious, a good player. They found a good running back last year, and they also, Logan Thomas, the tight end. I mean, I watched a bunch of games of him last year. I could not be more impressed with what they found there. He's another guy, quarterback convert. Now he's playing tight end in the NFL, and he looked like a really capable tight end, a really capable receiver. I don't know, what the sky is for these guys, but they're both really good players. They're both really talented players, and they can make an offense around these guys. Then you have Scary Terry McLaurin, who's just, he's one of the most explosive receivers in the game. I mean, now that you're pairing him with a real quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think you're going to see him put up some serious numbers. For fantasy players out there, Terry McLaurin might be a really good option next year. And they also have some good young receivers they've drafted over the last couple of years that might have a chance to really turn into something down the line. I mean, we really, really don't know. I know last year, I forget his name off the top of my head, but they had drafted a really good, 6'4" physical receiver. I don't know. He didn't do anything last year. I like Trey Quinn too. I think he's a pretty good slot guy. He's flashed. I think that their weapons will come along nicely. I think that, ultimately they have a lot of young talent there. Ryan Fitzpatrick might be able to, put that all together and make it work. The real hope, though, like I said, I mean, they don't have much of an offensive line. They're probably going to have to address that pretty early in the draft, because I think their offensive line, especially when you have a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, you're probably going to need to protect him a little bit. He's not necessarily the most mobile guy. But I mean, if you look at, what they did last year, winning the division, essentially behind Alex Smith, who was a shell of himself. Alex Smith last year was not a very good quarterback by any standard. I mean, he was just what he always was. He's a guy that won't lose you games. He won't make stupid decisions. He won't turn the ball over a lot. But he was just, he really couldn't play last year. I mean, he really was not impressive at all, aside from, the amazing story that he is by just making it back to the league after the injury that he suffered. I mean, that was amazing. If you ever saw pictures of his leg, post all the surgeries, it's insane. His leg looks like Frankenstein, and somehow he was able to start several NFL games and win most of them. I mean, that's the thing about Alex Smith, is he's a great leader, and he obviously, he gave them something they needed, which is a quality quarterback so they could rely on the defense. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think he probably turns the ball over more than Alex Smith does, but he also has that added element where he can win games for you. He can get hot, and he can win games for the Washington football team. Excuse me, as I mess up that name one more time. He can win games for them, and that's something that they haven't had in a long time. And I think if you just look around the division, he might be, from the second he comes into the division, I'm not sure if Dak Prescott, what he's going to be post-injury, but if Dak Prescott, doesn't look like himself, Ryan Fitzpatrick might be the best quarterback in the division to start the year. He could very well be the best quarterback in the division for the entire season. It's going to be really interesting. He's definitely in the mix. The quarterbacks in the division are so porous that even if Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't the best quarterback in the division, on any given Sunday, because of how streaky he could be, he could get hot and be playing like the best quarterback in the division. That's kind of what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's a guy who could come in one week, throw, several interceptions and just lose the game for you. But then another week, he just comes in hot and beats, throw five touchdowns and beat a team all by himself. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. And that's why he was never really a quality starter, because he's too streaky. But he's a guy that, Eagles fans remember pretty well. I mean, he beat us the last year we went to the playoffs. When the Eagles won four straight games, their last loss was against Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami. You know, that was an amazing performance. That's what that guy's capable of. And I think now that he's in a situation where, you know, he's got a really good defense behind him, I think that he makes them a very dangerous team. And I haven't seen a lot of people really talk about it yet. I've been mentioning in the last couple of podcasts that the Washington team is definitely a team that, I don't want to say they worry me, but they're definitely, you know, they're definitely prime candidates to win this division, especially now with a very capable quarterback. But I don't want to spend too much time on them. Ultimately, there is a lot of other free agency news, you know, flying around. I think that, you know, some of the bigger ones, I mean, the flurry of spending that the Patriots have put out there. You know, I know a lot of people were aware that they had good salary cap space. I think the more and more I look at it, I mean, how interesting as an NFL fan would it be if somehow the New England Patriots got it together and went to the Super Bowl against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Wouldn't that be an amazing storyline that the NFL would just die for? I mean, that would be an amazing... Brady versus Belichick. That would be just an amazing storyline that I, as a football fan, personally would love to see. It's something that's, you know, you definitely got to keep an eye on. I mean, I don't know if they can do that with Cam Newton. You know, if they, Cam Newton compared to the guys that are out there, might he might be the best option. I mean, there's not really a ton of options. Fitzpatrick is probably the best one. I don't really know what other options on the free agency market or trade market there really were. But I don't know if the Patriots can get back to the Super Bowl with Cam Newton. He really didn't look that great the first year. I think that he'll probably look better this upcoming season based off of the fact that it takes a little while to learn an offense, especially one as intricate as the Patriots' offense. But they didn't really, I mean, they weren't horrible last year. They were in the running for a playoff spot pretty much all the way towards maybe like week 14 or 15, I think, before it was pretty much all over. And they had a lot of games that were really close games. I remember watching the Seattle game. They lost that on the last play. You know what I mean? Like there was so many games that they had an opportunity to be in it all the way up to the end. So I think that they're going to be a playoff contending team. I just don't know if all the signings they made. I mean, they've added a lot of weapons. That was their biggest issue for the last couple of years, is they didn't have a lot of weapons. One of which, Philadelphia's own Nelson Aguilar, getting a really good sized contract for him. I mean, he had a great year. Watching him as an Eagles fan, you know, when he was in Philadelphia, most of his career, it was disappointing. He just didn't look like, you know, he just didn't look like he had it. His one year in Las Vegas, he looked like everything that we always wanted him to be. It would have been so nice to have that guy be the receiver that, you know, we had in Philadelphia. That guy, he looked like he could play outside. He looked like he had deep threat capability, all things that he couldn't show in Philadelphia. So it's really sad to see that, you know, a lot of players are leaving Philadelphia and having success in other places. Maybe a large part of it is because Nelson Aguilar had to. I mean, if he didn't go out to Las Vegas and have a good year, he'd probably be out of the league. So he went out to Las Vegas, had a really good year, and it worked out to the point where now he's going to have a very big contract, and he's going to be in a very good situation. I mean, there's, you know, nobody questions that Bill Belichick knows how to use his guys. Another really big signing yesterday was Jalen Mills, which is really, I've mentioned in this podcast as well, he was really the only guy that I would have liked to hold on to if the price was right. And looking at the contract that he got, 4 years, $24 million, the price never would have been right. We never would have been able to afford that. But he's a guy that, in my opinion, you know, as an Eagles fan, anytime you lose a player that was drafted, especially a young guy, he's going to be missed. I know a lot of people were really down on Jalen Mills. I look at it realistically. This isn't a guy who was a former first overall pick. He wasn't a number one overall pick. He wasn't something that we had to spend a lot of resources to get. Whenever you have a guy that you get like in a sixth, seventh round and you get something out of, that to me is special, because that's, you don't expect seventh round picks like Jalen Mills was to be great players. I don't have that expectation. So if people are upset that, you know, he got burned a few times as a cornerback and he didn't make a ton of plays, he didn't get a ton of interceptions, what do you expect out of a seventh round pick that you won a Super Bowl with as a starting cornerback his rookie year? That alone makes him a Philadelphia Eagles legend, in my opinion, that we are, you know, we're going to miss on some level. This is a guy here who, you know, in his very first rookie season, I remember watching a hype video of him against the Falcons, you know, before you run out of, before the team runs out of the tunnel, he's in the middle of the crowd, hands up, telling them all, you know, let's go get this win, and just ramping them up. I mean, stuff like that is pretty unheard of for a rookie to be in the spotlight, to be in the center of a huddle with veteran players. Never been in a playoff game in his life, but he's leading the crowd, and he's a leader without a doubt. I mean, from the second he came to Philadelphia, first thing he did was dye his hair green. Even though as a seventh round pick, I mean, you don't even know if you're going to make the roster as a seventh round pick. I mean, there's been seventh round picks and guys, you know, even before that, not making the roster, but he was all in from the second he was an Eagle. I'm sure he was the same way at LSU. You know, Jalen Mills, I mean, he wasn't a seventh round talent. That was something that, you know, people are always going to remember as a seventh round pick, but he had a higher grade than that from a lot of people. I think he had some off the field stuff, which obviously never materialized in Philadelphia. So that was obviously a good pick. But he had some off the field concerns that ultimately cost him a lot of draft status. But I think that from just his talent perspective, I think he was probably more like a second day pick that fell all the way to the seventh. And the Eagles got an absolute steal, and they got a lot out of him. They got a lot of snaps out of him. They got a lot of playing time out of him. And they had a lot of success with him, multiple playoff appearances and a Super Bowl, all with Jalen Mills. And I think he deserves an immense amount of respect. And he's another guy that I'm going to miss. I'm going to watch his career out there in New England. I hope that he becomes an even better player the same way a lot of players are leaving Philadelphia, the same way that Nelson Aguilar left Philadelphia and became a much better player. You know, these things, it just makes you wonder why the Eagles can't develop players in Philadelphia in these, you know, same positions, or why the Eagles can't get the same type of consistent success from some of these players while they're here. I think that, you know, a lot of people say that Howie Roseman hasn't drafted well. I think you could seriously question how the coaches have developed talent. I think that that might be part of the reason why, you know, this program has been going downhill. Maybe there's two ways to look at it. Maybe the players that the Eagles have been drafting have been good. It's just that once they get to, you know, the practice field, the coaches just aren't making them better. The coaches just aren't putting them in a position to succeed, because we've seen that. You know, Rasul Douglas had a pretty decent year in Carolina this last year. Sidney Jones made some plays in Jacksonville this past year. So it's fair to question, you know. I know a big story just came out that Doug Peterson maybe did some interview or something recently, you know, answering some of these questions. But, you know, it's very possible. It's very likely that part of the reason that the Eagles haven't drafted well is because once the coaches get a hold of these players, they just aren't doing a good enough job developing them. And I know that there's a lot of concern that the Eagles have held a lot of players back. You know, that contract is dictated. I mentioned this in podcasts before too. The contract has really dictated playing time too much. And I know that's hurting development of players. I know that's hurting development of a lot of players. I think that, you know, Jordan Mailata especially last year, there was no reason the way that he was playing that he should have lost his job to Jason Peters once Jason Peters was healthy. That drove me absolutely insane. Alshon Jeffrey taking his receiving job back, his starting job back, when we had a lot of success with some of the younger receivers, I never agreed with. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey caught 6 balls the entire year. I mean, you cannot validate a guy being on the field. I know he's making a lot of money, yada, 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 but you cannot validate that type of production. You couldn't validate it when, you know, they were getting that little production out of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I mean, even still, if you're only going to get 6 catches from a guy, Alshon Jeffrey, I would rather get 6 catches from a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Have him out there. Maybe, you know, maybe he figures it out. You know what I mean? It's obvious that Alshon Jeffrey's just physically just broken. So, you know, he's old. He's beaten down. He doesn't have the wheels anymore. He doesn't have anything anymore. I would rather have him running around, you know, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside running around trying to figure out how to play in the NFL so maybe you can get something from him in the future than Alshon Jeffrey running around. I mean, that made absolutely no sense. Keeping him on the team, okay, maybe that made a little bit of sense from salary cap purposes now that they've finally moved on from him, but I would have much rather seen, you know, snaps from John Hightower, anybody, you know, anybody else. I mean, they obviously have, you know, Rager and they have a lot of good young receivers that they could be, you know, working in that role, but anybody other than, you know, even Quez Watkins, who caught a couple balls. I would have rather seen production from anybody other than Alshon Jeffrey, because it just didn't make any sense. He wasn't a part of the future. You had a lot of games this year that really didn't mean anything because you knew the Eagles weren't going anywhere. You could have got meaningful reps to some of these young guys that you're trying to develop. It just didn't make any sense. That was one of the things that drove me the most insane, was their constant pushing Alshon Jeffrey to the forefront. And a lot of players that really, like Jason Peters, like who, you know, that was a mistake bringing him back. They had multiple young offensive linemen. They should just roll with them, save that money, and got them time to get prepared for the next season. And it seems like I actually have my concerns that they might try to bring Jason Peters back for another year, because he's talking like he wants to come back another year. He said that publicly. And he's also basically said that, you know what, he's a good coach as well as a player, that he could teach the young guys. Which is a very capable argument to make, because if you look at how well, and I've said this a lot in these podcasts, that I really think that the Eagles have developed the offensive line talent especially well over the years. And it's part of it is because they have so many veterans that the position coaches don't really have to spend a lot of time with. They don't have to spend time with Jason Kelce. You think that Jeff Stoutland spends a second with Jason Kelce, or you think he knows that Jason Kelce knows what he's doing? You think that he has to spend a lot of time with Lane Johnson, with Jason Peters, with guys like that? Or do you think that these position coaches and these assistants have a lot more time to spend with the young guys, and that's how they bring these young guys along so quickly? Then you also have obviously the benefit of the veteran players telling these guys what to do and telling these guys how to play and, you know, how to be effective and stuff like that. That's why the Eagles offensive linemen have come through so successfully, and we've basically turned into, you know, I don't want to borrow the term quarterback factory, but the Eagles are an offensive line factory. It didn't look like it last year because we had so many injuries. I mean, the Eagles were just absolutely devastated by injuries. But when you see how the young guys are playing, guys like Jordan Mailata, who's never even played football in his life, guys like Jack Driscoll, who I thought played really well when he had the opportunities, Nate Herbig, who I thought played really well. There were so many linemen that you could point to and say they developed over the years. And a large part of it is because they have, number one, great veterans that can teach these young guys. And two, the veterans are so well established that they don't need a lot of extra time from the coaches, to the point where the coaches can spend a lot of extra time on the young guys. So that's something that, you know, if Jason Peters were to come back, that would be probably a pretty big selling point, is the idea that he can teach the young guys and maybe teach Andre Dillard and stuff like that. If that's the case, so I'd much rather see him come back as a coach. You know what I mean? I'm tired of seeing him as a player tapping out several snaps into the game all the time and then costing a lot of money to do it. These are two things that we really can't afford. I do not want Jason Peters back. Let's be very clear about that. But without a doubt, you know, there is something to be said about how this organization has consistently brought up linemen and how it's consistently turned linemen into Pro Bowl quality linemen, or even in that realm. I mean, there's, you know, the Eagles have really good linemen all across the board, and I really like their young offensive linemen as well. And it's really a tribute to the system. You could say something similar about the defensive line as well, which I think that they've also churned out a lot of talent. They're consistently in the, you know, amongst the league leaders in sacks and pressures and, you know, quarterback hits, all the stats that really make a defense run well year after year. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, they're the same principles, the same veterans, the same, you know, the veterans teaching the young guys, coaches not necessarily needing to teach the veterans so they can spend more time with the young guys. That's why you're seeing guys like Josh Sweat look like a quality, you know, possible capable starter of the future, you know, things like that, that the Eagles do well, because they don't really seem to get a lot of credit for the things they do well. So I'm going to try to give them credit for the things they do well. With that being said, since the Eagles are pretty quiet right now in free agency, they haven't signed anybody, I would like to look to the draft. I still think that they're not even under the salary cap right now. That's something that is not necessarily being talked about enough either, as free agency has pretty much already started and signings are pretty much coming already off the board. The Eagles are not under the deadline, with, you know, tomorrow being the deadline. So I'm sure they'll get under. They have to. What they'll do to get under is yet to be seen. The official number's not out because the Brandon Graham structure hasn't been included in the most recent projected number, but apparently they're like 17 mil over. The Brandon Graham restructure probably brings them down within, you know, a couple of million over. But they, I mean, they still have some options. I mean, they could release Derek Barnett. They could re-sign Derek Barnett to an extension. They could do any number of things with just him alone to get under the salary cap. And then there's always the Zach Ertz thing hanging over everybody's head. Will he be an Eagle next year? When will he be gone? Type of thing. So there's definitely some moves that still have to be made by tomorrow. So maybe me recording this podcast is a little bit premature. But I just wanted to talk about some of the things that have been happening. So I'm sure they'll get under the cap. I don't know what they'll have to do or how drastic the news will have to be for them to do that. But without a doubt, I mean, you know, this is since the free agency is going pretty quietly, I did want to spend a little time talking about the number six pick, because recently there was a workout from Trey Lance, who's one of the high-rising prospects for quarterback in the draft. I mean, this is a guy who I personally am not a huge fan of, but apparently his workout was so good that now, you know, people are talking. This guy's moving up the board. So the Eagles definitely were well represented there. I think Howie Roseman was there. I know their quarterback coach was there in Brian Johnson. Obviously, they are doing their homework on all these quarterbacks. And when you hear the story come out that Jeffrey Lurie's like, you know what, Jalen Hurts is our guy, don't look at anybody else, actions speak louder than words. And if you're sending everybody there to check a guy out like that, you know, obviously it's not smoke and mirrors, because you're sending half your organization to go check out a quarterback that could very well be now considered a guy possible for the number six pick. Now, I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not a huge Trey Lance guy. The guy's got all the physical tools. I'm not arguing that. But I think that, you know, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I'm actually on board with taking a quarterback at six, if that were to happen, which is something that I've pretty much said, no, you got to get a weapon, which, you know, I just don't think conventional wisdom. I mean, how many receivers win Super Bowls based off of them? You know what I mean? Like, it's not really how it works. If that was the case, Randy Moss would have a couple of rings. Terrell Owens would have a couple of rings. Marvin Harris would have a couple of rings. Chris Carter would have a couple of rings. I mean, all these guys were great receivers. A lot of them played on the same team. Randy Moss and Chris Carter play on the same team, and it didn't matter. It didn't get them any championships. So, to me, a receiver, a playmaker, I don't find that that's the best use of the resource of number six. I find that the number six pick, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I look at it, the more and more I hear other people you know, give their long-term projections of Jalen Hurts. And I really like Jalen Hurts. I still really like Jalen Hurts. But I have no issue wasting the number six pick if it means getting a guy like you know, Aaron Rodgers, or a guy like Patrick Mahomes, if it means ensuring that you have a number one quarterback or number two or number three quarterback in the league, one of those top five guys that Super Bowls just revolve around, guys like Tom Brady, guys like you know, Russell Wilson, guys that are always have their team in the hunt for a championship, we need to secure that. So if they think Jalen Hurts is that guy, okay, fine. I think he can be. It wouldn't surprise me if he turns into the next Russell Wilson. I've already heard that projection from, you know, several people. Ron Rivera said as much going into the Week 17 matchup against the Eagles last year. He said, you know, he reminds me a lot of Russell Wilson. This isn't something that, you know, I'm just pulling out of the sky. There's a lot of people around the league that think that Jalen Hurts could be a steal and could be an eventual, you know, he could be a guy like Dak Prescott. I've always said that's, to me, the scale. He's somewhere between a Dak Prescott and being I think that's a good projection, or being maybe as good as a guy like Russell Wilson, which obviously is a bit pie in the sky, but there's a possibility of that. He would have to work at it. He'd have to get there. I think it's a possibility. I don't think it's a probability. I was listening to Ray Dinger recently, who just thinks that flat out this guy is the next Tyrod Taylor, and things like that really give me concern. Not that, you know, Ray Dinger is always correct, but he's a guy that I definitely listen to a lot, and I definitely respect his opinion. So if that's the case, if you think that eventually this guy might just be, you know, a guy, like, say they go, you know, 8-8 next year. I know there's going to be an extra game, so say they go 8-9 next year, and Jalen Hurts just, he's flashes, but he just doesn't look like the guy. Well, now you're in a position where you can't even get the number one quarterback anymore. Now you're kind of stuck with Jalen Hurts, because you're not necessarily going to be bad enough to be able to get those, you know, top tier prospects at quarterback. You're in a unique position this year at number six to get a top tier quarterback, a loaded draft of top tier quarterback prospects. So to me, this is a prime time. If there's people in the building that really think that Jalen Hurts is just going to be okay, then you have to go get a quarterback. You have to take this opportunity at the number six pick and get a quarterback, because I don't really think there's a lot of positions around the NFL that affect winning as much, and I think that's pretty obvious. But I don't think that when I look at the position that the Eagles need, I just don't think that there's a realistic value at six outside of either quarterback, offensive lineman, or defensive lineman. That's how the NFL is. The NFL, they value quarterback first, then they value protecting the quarterback second, then they value attacking the quarterback third, which is the, you know, defensive ends, defensive tackles. Well, you can mark the defensive ends and defensive tackles off the board. There's no guy in this draft that plays those two positions that's worth the number six pick. So you can just wipe that right off. There's no edge rusher. There's no Chase Young this year. If the Eagles trade back, there's some quality options, but there's no generational pass rusher that the Eagles could get at six. It just doesn't exist in this draft. So, I mean, not necessarily that, you know, a guy wouldn't emerge, but I'm just saying from just looking at it prospect wise, it doesn't exist in this draft. Then you look at offensive line. The Eagles don't really need offensive line, in my opinion. I think they have a lot of good young linemen. If they lost all their veterans, if they lost Jason Kelce, if they lost Jason Peters, who obviously I think should be gone, if they lost Lane Johnson, and if they lost Brandon Brooks all this year, if they all retired, the Eagles would still have, at bookends, at the very least, they would have Jordan Mailata, who I thought, and I've said this multiple times, and I can quote several other analysts who feel the same way, that this guy looks like he could be a future Pro Bowler. He's got all the tools, and I thought that he played very well last year. Jordan Mailata looks like a stud in my book. And then there's obviously Andre Dillard, who was your first round pick. That could be your bookend tackles for the next decade right there. Andre Dillard is a bit of a mystery, but you know, I think a lot of people have really made a lot out of reports of, you know, from camp, and you know, he doesn't look like this, he doesn't look like that. We got to see the guy play. You know what I mean? It's just that simple. And if he can't play, I think Jack Driscoll looked pretty good in game last year. So I think that between those three guys, you can make bookend tackles at the very least for the next couple of years. You can figure it out between those three guys. Then you move inside to the guards and the centers. I think Seumalo could easily kick inside the center. He played center in college. Herbig, Sua Apeta. I mean, they would definitely need to replenish, but they have a lot of good young players. They have a lot of good young players across the line. They could make a line out of their backup lineman, out of their young lineman alone. They could make a pretty serviceable offensive line just like that. And at the end of the day, if you look at the value at the sixth pick, the only lineman that makes sense at the sixth pick would be tackles. I don't really think that you could, unless there's a Steve Hutchinson in the draft, which there is not, there's no lineman, interior lineman, that makes sense at the number six pick. It just doesn't happen. It would have to be a generational guard. It would have to be a guy Quentin Nelson. You know what I mean? A guy that's just like, you can't miss. You know what I mean? A guy that just can't miss. He's going to be a Hall of Fame lineman. That's the only way you're taking an interior guy at six. So ultimately, you're really only looking at a few positions that are, once again, worth it. Quarterback, offensive tackle, which I don't think that, you know, Penei Sewell is probably the best guy there. I don't really think we need an offensive tackle right now. You know what I mean? You could double down on it. You could draft a guy like that. But then you're basically giving up on Andre Dillard, which is pretty much something I don't think the Eagles are willing to do. The Eagles are not a team that like to give up on their first round draft picks, especially since he hasn't even really played yet. You got to see him out on the field, because the same reports about Andre Dillard not looking good in training camp are the same reports that we heard about Jordan Mailata. We heard that Jordan Mailata might get cut this year. He might not even make the team. He looks lost. He looks like he's regressed. He looks like he doesn't know what he's doing. They're the same reports we heard from both players. Then Jordan Mailata hit the field and the rubber met the road, and he was just kicking ass all year. So I can't go off of reports from beat writers just trying to get you to click on a story, because Andre Dillard being a bust, or basically any first round pick the Eagles make not being good, seems to be a hot button that that writers like to press. They like to try to get clicks by constantly making Howie Roseman look like a jackass for every draft pick that he makes. I want to see Andre Dillard on the field before I even get close to that. The same way I want to see Jalen Hurts on the field more before I think it's time to move on from him as a quarterback prospect. But with that being said, since those are the two biggest value spots, you know, I can basically eliminate both of them. I don't think the Eagles need a tackle. I don't think that there's a lineman on the defensive side worth the number six pick. And that really just leaves you with what? It leaves you with quarterback, which there'll be a ton of quarterbacks that are worth the number six pick on the board. And it also leaves with, you know, maybe going with a cornerback, maybe going with a linebacker. The Eagles are not going linebacker, by the way. I'm not even going to entertain that. They've shown that they don't care about linebacker at all. So for the people out there holding out hope for Micah Parsons, for the people holding out hope, I don't really think that cornerback matters either. When the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017, their cornerbacks were atrocious. They gave up 500 yards in the Super Bowl to Tom Brady, but they still won the game. So I don't think that that matters either. If you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, their cornerbacks, they're okay. You know what I mean? Like, they have a couple of decent young quarterbacks, but ultimately, that's not what won them the Super Bowl. It was the pressure of the front four, the front seven. You know what I mean? That's how you win Super Bowls, in my opinion, and that's the Eagles' philosophy. Defensive linemen are way more important than the guys on the back half. If you can get to the quarterback, you're going to stop plays in the backfield. That's just pretty much how defenses, that's why that's the value scale. Obviously, you want to have some decent cornerbacks, but I can't think that's the number six pick is a good option for cornerback, no matter how much I really like some of the cornerback prospects that are in the draft. I just can't buy that. I can't look at the cornerbacks and say that that's going to make us a Super Bowl contender if we draft one of these cornerbacks or safeties, which once again, the Eagles really need safeties, but I don't really think there's a safety that's worth the number six pick. So if you're just looking at value alone, there's not a ton of options. And I really am coming around more and more to the idea of drafting a quarterback at six based off the fact that value-wise, that's the only position that I can really think is worth it. I mean, honestly, like every you know, that just receiver alone is just not enough. I feel like you can easily get – this is a very deep draft. You can easily get a very good receiver in the second round that can produce on the same level as some of the receivers in the first round. That's just pretty much how I feel about it. With that being said, I mean, I do really like Ja'Marr Chase. You know, the idea that, I don't know, Justin Jefferson was his teammate in LSU, and Ja'Marr Chase was so good that Justin Jefferson basically, they had to kick Justin Jefferson inside to the slot based purely off of how good, you know, Ja'Marr Chase was. I mean, that alone just says how good Ja'Marr Chase can be. I mean, I don't know, you know. And then Justin Jefferson, obviously, last year had an all-time rookie year in Minnesota. And, you know, the idea that we could have that guy, but maybe a better version of that guy, I mean, that says a lot. You know what I mean? That really says a lot. So Ja'Marr Chase, if he's there, it would be hard to pass him up because obviously he would help any quarterback we have in our system look better. I mean, it's so rare that you get that type of perspective on a receiver prospect where you have a guy that, you know, you have two guys that were teammates, one of which is already in the league and just blown it up. And then you can look back to college and say, well, this guy's even better. So he's going to, you know, obviously be even better in the NFL. I mean, that's a pretty safe bet based off of that thought process. Kind of reminds me of Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. I mean, Jarvis Landry was a great college receiver and so was Odell Beckham, but obviously Odell Beckham's the better version of Jarvis Landry. He's a guy that plays outside. He's a guy that can, you know, he runs better routes. He's faster. He's got better hands, all that stuff. So it's like if Justin Jefferson's the Jarvis Landry in the situation, then we could get a guy like an Odell Beckham, which obviously any team would take. I mean, obviously Odell Beckham, even though he hasn't been playing great these last couple of years, when he was playing his best, he was one of the best receivers in the league. So it's hard to pass on that, but like I said, I just don't see the value of receiver at six. The Eagles didn't have great receivers when they won the Super Bowl in 2017. It's not necessarily that's not necessarily the path, you know, to winning Super Bowls. Great receivers don't necessarily win Super Bowls. Larry Fitzgerald has never won a Super Bowl. He made it to one. You know what I mean? DeAndre Hopkins, he's probably the best receiver in football right now. He's not going anywhere necessarily. You know what I mean? There's so many Calvin Johnson. There's so many great receivers that just don't go anywhere. Because it all starts with the quarterback. So to me, the Eagles need to figure it out. They need to figure out before this draft, is Jalen Hurts the guy or is he not the guy? And if he's not the guy, they got to go quarterback at six. I just can't see the value that they could get out of this pick at any other position. You know, and receiver just doesn't do it for me, honestly. It just doesn't do it for me. I think that quarterback, you know, at number six, quarterback would probably be the best option. I don't really see any other option. And I'm not saying I want Trey Lance. I'm not saying that at all. I'd say Justin Fields. If they can figure out how to get Justin Fields at six, there's a very good possibility that he's still around. That would probably be my ideal. That's a guy I've always said. As I've talked about this in other podcasts, my hanging point was always, well, what if Justin Fields is there? Because I think Justin Fields is a special prospect. I think he's, you know, a guy who's clearly more physically talented than a Jalen Hurts. And that's pretty much, you know, the guy that I would have a real conundrum if he was there. But it really depends on how the Eagles, you know, if they fall in love with a guy. I mean, that's the thing. Like, when these guys go to watch these guys work out and they see their pro days, that's really when, you know, these coaches and these guys that make the decisions really have the opportunity to say, you know what, we got to get this guy. And they fall in love with a guy and then they do what it takes to get a guy. That's pretty much, you know, as far as I could say. But if they don't fall in love with those guys, we're probably looking at a receiver at six. I mean, I can't really see it any other way. There's a number of guys. I really think if the Eagles don't go with a quarterback at six, my only other option that I would be happy with is trading back and getting a receiver later, because there's so many good receivers in this draft, whether it's Jamar Chase, whether it's Devontae Smith, who, you know, according to mocks, are sliding a little bit. A lot of people think Jalen Waddle is better, so he's another guy. Kyle Pitts. That's four guys right there, four top-tier prospects right there that I would take any one of them. So if they're all still on the board at six, trade back, pick up whatever one you can still pick up, and then pick up some additional draft capital. That would be my two scenarios. Either take quarterback at six, because to me, that's the only position other than Jamar Chase. If Jamar Chase is there at six, I'd probably be happy with them taking him. But otherwise, take a quarterback at six, or if you're not going to go with a quarterback, if you really believe in Jalen Hurts, trade back a little bit and try to pick up one of these, not lesser receivers, but try to pick up whoever's left. You know, I mean, let the board fall out. If you think that they're all about the same, Waddle, Pitts, Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, if you have them all graded similarly and they're all still on the board, just move back a couple of picks, pick up some more draft picks, let one of these other teams get a quarterback. That's probably the two best scenarios to maximize the value of the number six pick. And there's several teams right behind them that all need quarterbacks. So, you know, that's a good position to be in. Losing that last game did afford them to jump ahead of some quarterback needy teams like the Broncos, or, you know, any number of teams that need a quarterback that are willing to trade you the most draft capital to move up. For the Eagles to move back a couple of picks would be ideal. So that's, to me, how I would really like to see the draft play out, because I'm in the same boat. Like, I don't really care. Any four of those receivers, if they took one of them, I would not care which one. They all sound great to me. Everybody's going to have their favorite, but all four of them have a lot of ability. And if they're all still on the board, I would be torn. I would rather let the board play out. I'd rather trade back a couple of picks, let the board play out, and then pick from what's left, because to me, they're all in the same tier of capability. So, you know, that's how I would handle it. And I wouldn't even be opposed to them not drafting receiver in the first round, going in the second round. This is a very deep wide receiver class. This is a very, you don't have to go first round receiver. If they find better value, if they go cornerback in the first round, if they trade back first and then they take a receiver in the second round, that would be a good move too. But at six, I just don't see it. Six is too valuable to me, especially to teams that need quarterbacks. I think that number six pick has to be a quarterback, whether it's from the Eagles or whether it's from a team the Eagles trade that pick to. That number six pick should be a quarterback. That's just how I feel. Now, the Eagles did pick up a couple of extra draft picks too from the comp formula. They picked up two additional sixth-round picks, which is, you know, that can't be understated, because the Eagles do have a very good history of drafting guys late in the draft. We mentioned a couple of them in this podcast. Jordan Mailata was a seventh-round pick. Jalen Mills, who just left, with a seventh-round pick. Jason Kelsey was a sixth-round pick. So picking up two sixth-round picks in the comp formula, I think, was pretty big. Gives them 10 total picks going into the draft, which is looking more and more likely to be the way that we're going to turn this team around. We need to hit a home run with this draft. We need to maybe get, you know, five players out of this draft of obviously varying differences as far as skill. We don't need five Pro Bowlers, but we need five guys that can contribute or better out of this draft for the Eagles to kind of turn this roster around. And obviously, the more picks you have, the better. So I'm pretty happy with the idea they have 10 picks. Like I said, if they could trade back from six, add a couple more, I think that would be perfect. They don't even have money right now. That's part of it, too. They don't even have money to sign the draft picks right now. So, obviously, they got to get that figured out. So, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to end the podcast there. I think, without a doubt, I touched on all the major stories from around the league, from around the division, especially, and definitely around the Eagles. Free agency, the second the Eagles sign a player worth mentioning, I'm going to hop back on here and give you guys another pod. So if you like this pod, if you enjoyed this episode today, make sure to give me a follow because I'm going to touch on just about every Eagles news-related story in the offseason that I can because, you know, this is what we're trying to do here. We're trying to be up to date. So, like I said, give it a follow if you would. Other than that, I appreciate you listening, and this has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman. Thanks for listening. I'm out.